Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. How do we make products more delightful instead of just functional? Well, we change the words we use to describe them. Hello, listeners. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. This is Bill Quinn, and today is November 22nd, 2013. We're on day two of our innovation article, Silicon Valley's Delight. You can find it on pages 34 through 36 in your Advanced magazine. And it's a very interesting article. It's not just about technology and Silicon Valley and products, things like that, but it's also a lot about consumer behavior and understanding what gets people to buy things and keep using them. So kind of a psychology article in a way also. Well, I'm glad I've got my two panelists back from yesterday. Simon Stops and Amanda Young appear. Hello, panelists.
Hello.
Great to have you back. Now, before we move into today, let me get maybe something from yesterday, a key word or an idea from yesterday that you think might be worth reviewing for our listeners.
Well, Bill, I enjoyed the phrase all the rage. Okay. When we talk about all the rage, we talk about something being popular at this time. And so, Bill, it reminded me, for instance, a sentence like Bill's new hairstyle is all the rage.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. For instance, maybe if I went and got a new hairstyle and I had like a blue stripe down the middle of like blue-colored hair, and like everybody saw it, and they were like, wow, that's like so cool, and we got to go do that.
Exactly. They want the same thing.
My blue hair would be all the rage. Look for it. Maybe I'll do that. Start a new trend here in Taipei. Bill's blue hair. Simon Stops.
Oh, I guess I liked the idea that they ended yesterday with. It was summed up in the sentence, what should come first is not the technology, but the people it is intended to serve. And I thought that was a great idea. Wouldn't it be nice if companies were making products that we liked and wanted instead of just products they were pushing us to buy?
Yeah. Well, I think we are getting to that point. We're certainly are in an age of certainly much more customization and specialization.
Yeah.
You know, we're kind of spoiled today in the year 2013. We expect everything to just fit our needs perfectly. And we kind of lose track of the fact that 20, 30, 40 years ago, things were just kind of mass-produced. And you were given only a few choices of products.
Right.
And, you know, whether it was cars or phones or different things like that. And you had a limited number of choices. Things weren't customized. Hmm. And today we want everything customized. So we're getting there. We've got a pretty good variety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What a great idea that is.
Yeah. So, and we're going to get even further into customization in the future. And part of that is actually these product developers understanding what delights their customers. So that's what we're talking about in this article. We're talking about delight, right?
Exactly.
What does that mean?
You know, it's joy, things you really like or things you really enjoy doing make you feel delight.
Why is this
great
term
happiness?
Why is this term all the rage now?
Because people are wanting, well, should I say the companies are wanting the consumers to feel this way about the products that they're making.
Mm-hmm. But they also pointed out yesterday that it kind of started with Steve Jobs.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. It was a legacy from him. Sometimes he had some famous sayings and he might stand up at one of their meetings and introduce a product. And, and I guess at one of their meetings he spoke of wanting to surprise and delight people. And so, and there was a period of time whenever anything Steve Jobs said, it became instant news, right?
Right.
And people wanted to copy it.
Yeah.
Because they were successful and made a lot of money.
His quotes were all the rage, Bill.
You're right.
They still are.
They still are. So, yeah. All right. Well, let's do this. Turn to page 35. We'll take our reading and split it up into three sections today.
Disciples of delight want their brethren to put down their protractors, quit writing code for a moment, step out of their cubicles, and try to understand the lives of the people they want to use their product. Instead of aggregating astronomical amounts of digital data to judge the success of a product, watch someone use it and see if they smile or laugh with joy. You want to make a product that goes beyond its basic functions to create an emotional connection with the user, said Bill Burnett, executive director of the Product Design Program at Stanford University, which teaches students how to humanize products and services.
Disciples of delight. Why don't you read this sentence? This is really a classic sentence.
This is a great one. Disciples of delight want their brethren to put down their protractors. Disciples of delight. Well, this word disciples, usually we use it to talk about followers, people who are following an idea or a belief. In this case, they're people who are following and promoting this idea of delight. And it says they want their brethren, which means, you know, sort of their brothers. Often when we say brethren, we don't actually mean a brother from your family. Mm-hmm. We're talking about people from the same organization as you. All of us work as editors. We might say we are brethren working as editors for magazines.
Very close colleagues.
Close colleagues.
Yeah. And they want them to do what?
Put down their protractors. Now, protractor is a tool that is used to measure angles. And so I think it's an interesting thing to say. Why would you want to put down your protractor?
Is the protractor the one that's like half a circle
in a math
set?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It's a half a circle to help you measure angles. Right. And it's all part of, you know, be used heavily in engineering and creating products. Okay. Now, here I am. I'm a disciple of delight. I'm spreading delight. I'm walking around the cubicles. I see my brethren, Simon, working hard with his protractor. And then I say to you, I want you to do what?
Put down that protractor. Let's quit writing code, you know? Yeah. I guess the idea being, I'm working away on some very technical things.
Right.
Focusing on the math, focusing on the computer programming. And you're saying, stop doing that for a moment. Step out of the cubicle.
Yeah.
Right? And try to understand the lives of people who are going to use this product.
There's kind of like, if I would be trying to get you to do that, it's almost kind of a Zen-like principle that I want you to get in touch with the world.
I don't know about Zen-like, but we do talk about top-down versus bottom-up sometimes. You've heard that term, right? Mm-hmm. I guess the idea top-down here is a designer has an idea, they put together a product, and then they leave it to the marketing people to find people to buy it.
Right.
But this is very different. They want to try something different. They want to take those product developers and go out into the world and see what people need and then make things that meet those needs.
Yeah, get in touch with people. Get in touch with the customers. Yeah. And also, as we continue,
instead of aggregating astronomical amounts of digital data to judge the success of a product, why don't you go and watch someone use it and see if they smile or laugh with joy? Now, the word aggregating means to collect or group things. And astronomical is used to describe something extremely large.
Okay, so the first sentence in this paragraph talked about designing functional products. This sentence talks about then maybe consumer research consisting of gathering large amounts of statistics to say, oh, well, this is a success or it's not a success. But actually, what is the paragraph saying?
Well, they're saying, you know, don't worry about the sales numbers. Worry about whether or not the people who are using it are happy with it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. See them smile. See them laugh and be happy with actually using the product. Next paragraph, we hear from Bill Burnett, who is at Stanford University. What does he say?
He says, you want to make a product that goes beyond its basic functions to create an emotional connection with the user. So I guess the idea is you might have a hammer and use it to hit a nail, but you might have your great-grandfather's hammer, and you can use it to hit a nail too, but it has a feeling associated with it because it belonged to your great-grandfather.
I'm thinking right now, when I was in America back in the summertime, and I don't know if this commercial has been in Asia yet or not, but Apple was playing Made in California. It was a commercial that they created, and it was all about – it was this touchy-feely commercial, and it was all about having a relationship with your gadget, with your iPhone or your iPad or whatever it was. And it was this, you know, meaningful music, meaningful narration, slow motion scenes of people in relationships, but everybody had a gadget somewhere in there. And it was about connecting with the gadget.
Mm.
And actually, that's what I think of emotional connection here with the user, which this Bill Burnett is talking about. That's actually, this is a mindset at Apple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They want people to sit in a circle holding hands with their iPhones and weeping together.
Yeah. Well, I think it's what he does, which teaches students how to humanize products and services. Mm-hmm. So, you know, companies are looking for ways to market their products so that they appear to be human.
Yeah. And so this is not this box that does something. This is an integral part of my life. Mm-hmm. Not only does it delight me, it is an integral part of my life. That's the whole idea behind this thinking. And again, Bill Burnett is executive director of the product design program at Stanford University. Of course, they teach students there, but they have a massive impact on Silicon Valley. And so, you know, so many people in all of these tech companies actually went through Stanford. So, and what Bill Burnett is talking about and teaching is how to humanize products and services. Maybe a concept that people didn't really think about 20 years ago. I know when I was working in the business world, working for Xerox and ADP, automatic data processing, and new people that worked in these technology companies, we didn't think about humanizing our products. I was in sales and I was in marketing, and I can tell you 20 years ago when I was doing it, we weren't thinking, how do I humanize this product? All I was selling was speed and efficiency and productivity and lower cost. That's what I was selling. I wasn't selling, you're going to find this delightful. Okay, hopefully we'll find the next reading delightful.
Delight defined. The Merriam-Webster Dictionary defines delight as 1. A high degree of gratification, joy, extreme satisfaction. 2. Something that gives great pleasure. Nobody seemed better able to create products that evoked such feelings than Jobs. Jobs argued that truly great leaps of innovation came through intuition and understanding how people lived their lives, not spreadsheets full of market research. For Jobs, the word encapsulated the powerful insight that good design could induce people to fetishize their appliances rather than just being satisfied with them, said Jeff Nunberg, a linguist at the University of California, Berkeley's School of Information.
Okay, we've been talking about this word, delight. Now, how do we define it?
Well, we get a couple of definitions here from the Merriam-Webster Dictionary. The first one says, it's a high degree of gratification, which means you feel really great about it, joy, and extreme satisfaction.
Okay, all right. And then something that gives great pleasure. And yesterday, we had talked about how this word had become so popular in Silicon Valley. It is a legacy, we said, of Steve Jobs. Nobody seemed better able to create products that evoked such feelings than Job's.
That's right, Bill. And yesterday you mentioned the difference between invoke and evoke.
Yes. So it's always exciting when you see words like that in our readings that are, you know, close, but they are different. So he was able to invoke the word and actually evoke the feelings from the consumers. And Job's argued what?
The truly great leaps of innovation came through intuition and understanding how people live their lives. So he said truly great leaps, so large, amazing differences in innovation came through intuition, instinct, and also understanding how people are using these products in their everyday lives.
Well, we might see the term intuition used a lot of times. We might say a woman's intuition or a mother's intuition, right?
Right.
That's almost like seemingly knowing something. You don't have all the information, but you're able to get a good feel for the situation.
Mm. Yeah. Yes. Well, we say a gut instinct.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that feeling can often be in this, in what we say, in your stomach.
It's not just, again, not just statistics and measurements then. So, and not just using spreadsheets. What's a spreadsheet?
Spreadsheet. Basically, we're talking about Microsoft Excel here, where mm-hmm. people are, you know, doing some data analysis in a yep. computer program.
Okay. And for Job's, what?
Well, it said the word, we're talking about delight here, encapsulated, which means included or contained mm-hmm. The powerful insight that good design could induce people to fetishize their appliances. And induce, of course, means make people.
And to fetishize comes from the word fetish, and fetish is when something is excessively loved or excessively used or you're obsessed about it. So they love their appliance or product so much that they can't live without it and everything is involved with it.
It's a really unique word. Fetish is the noun. He has a fetish for, then fill in the blank, it might be shoes or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she might have a fetish for a certain item or something. So the fetishize is a really odd verb
right.
that we rarely see it. But it describes in such depth that – and this goes back to that – what we're talking about, the gadgets. Jobs wanted people to fetishize their iPhone so much that they would walk around all day with the thing in their hand, and they could not exist without that iPhone in their hand and looking at it constantly.
Mm. And he got it.
He got it.
He got it.
And that was all in the design.
I don't know if you're all iPhone users or smartphone users, right?
Yeah. Smartphone, yeah.
Kind of, sort of.
kind of, sort of.
Mine broke several months ago. And
you know, back in the day before the iPhone, I carried this big bag, you know, with like a notebook and different kind of stuff. I had all these back problems from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I got my first smartphone,
mm-hmm.
and it changed my life. It replaced everything in the bag.
Yeah.
You know, all kinds of things. You're going to go somewhere. You don't need to figure out where you're going before you leave.
True.
And your back is better.
Your back is better. It changes your life. Okay. You use it all the time for all kinds of things.
Yeah. So he wanted this to be, as we see here, rather than just being satisfied with them, he didn't want it just to be useful. He wanted them to just make this a part of their life.
Right.
Then. All right. This comes from Jeff Nunberg, a linguist at the University of California, Berkeley's School of Information. Interesting. A linguist.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's a linguist?
A person who studies languages.
Yeah. So why would we be getting a quote from a guy who studies language when we're talking about technology and gadgets and stuff like that?
Well, I think in this case, because he's talking about what the word delight meant to Steve Jobs, right? He's saying the word delight encapsulated or meant, included these other ideas.
Yeah. And a key thing to remember for all of our listeners is that of course, Steve Jobs never finished college, and the little bit of time he did spend in college, he was majoring, I believe it was, in calligraphy.
I think he took a calligraphy class.
Or he was studying writing.
I think it was like liberal arts or something. Like he was studying a very kind of mixed
He was there like less than
a bunch
year
of subjects
or something like that. So it's not like he was even a technology guru. He was more of an artist than anything. Actually, when they started to Apple, the Apple company, way back in the beginning, his partner Steve Wozniak actually was the technical guru, and Steve Jobs was the design specialist. Let's have our final reading for today.
Fleeting loyalty. Jobs is gone, but the gargantuan halo-shaped campus the company is building in California is destined to become Silicon Valley's shrine to delight. The company says one of the objectives of the campus is to provide an on-site venue for the introduction of Apple's new products that will generate surprise and delight. Apple's success in the past decade has naturally inspired entrepreneurs and companies to emulate it. These followers want to create something that inspires that same fanaticism to win some loyalty in a world in which today's flashy new gadget can quickly become tomorrow's 8-track tape player.
Bill Quinn here with Amanda Young-Gapir and Simon Stops. We're on day two of Silicon Valley's Delight. Our third section for today, fleeting loyalty. What does fleeting loyalty mean?
It means that it leaves. It comes for a time and then it's gone. So something that stays around for a very short amount of time.
And in fact, we actually see fleeting loyalty in many ways. I think of there are maybe athletes or singers or actors who are really popular for a period of time, right? And they'll have swarms of people cheering for them, following them around, and then a year later, nobody knows who they are.
Right.
Right? And so there's like fleeting loyalty there.
Fleeting.
Yeah, it comes and goes so
comes
easily.
Comes and goes.
Yeah.
Temporary.
And this also can happen even in companies where employees might have fleeting loyalty, and that does happen in Silicon Valley. A lot of young people come out of college, and they're just really looking for experience, and they kind of bounce around. They'll be at a place for 1 year and another year here, another year there, and you know they've got fleeting loyalty towards the employees. So our employers make that. But now we're still talking about this term, Delight, and Steve Jobs.
Well, it says Jobs is gone, but the gargantuan halo-shaped campus the company is building in California is destined to become Silicon Valley's shrine to delight. So okay. I guess the idea here being Steve Jobs might be gone, but this pursuit of delight is still part of Apple.
Okay, it's still there. Gargantuan.
Very large. Gargantuan means extremely big. You know, we talk about gigantic, ginormous. Gargantuan is like the next level up.
All right, halo-shaped.
Well, a halo is, I guess, the donut-shaped thing you usually see over an angel's head.
Okay.
Right? And so halo-shaped, we're talking about a donut-shaped campus.
Like a
donut-shaped
circle?
Building,
yeah.
Office building.
Yeah. All right. And it is destined to become, it is like, it's in the future, you can see it, destined to become Silicon Valley's shrine. What's that mean?
Well, shrine is usually the place where you worship something. And so here, many people love Apple products. And they want this place to be a place where people will come so faithfully that to enjoy being delighted.
Yeah. Now, I can understand this because now a lot of companies put much more thought into designing their buildings than they did in the past and where they do work. And again, I've described my experience 25 years ago in the corporate world, thinking about the offices that my companies were located in. They basically were just these square buildings. They were just these glass and steel things. They were square and they looked okay on the outside, but they didn't inspire anybody. They were just a box we went into. Whereas now so many of these companies actually, even in how they design the buildings, is aimed at generating certain emotions from employees and customers.
Well, and not just that. They're talking here about providing an on-site venue. So actually having a place in this halo-shaped campus to introduce people to Apple's new products.
Yeah.
I guess the idea being people can come there, they can visit, they can see new products before they're released or see what is coming out so people can get excited about these ideas.
They want it to be a great experience, not just the products. They want you, as soon as you walk onto this campus, they want you to start feeling good.
Right. Very interactive.
Yeah. All right. And they hope that when you do walk onto their campus, that this whole experience will generate surprise and delight. You'll be standing there going, wow. Apple's success in the past decade has
naturally inspired entrepreneurs and companies to emulate it. So just as we were saying, Steve Jobs' quotes and phrases have stayed around and continue to inspire. So does Apple's success, and entrepreneurs and companies want to copy that and see if they can achieve the same results.
Yeah, all right. Maybe if you watch Simon, you see he's successful in something, you might emulate him and say, I'm going to do the same thing.
That's right.
Happens all the time, Bill. People copy all of my good ideas. I wanted to add, though, that, you know, the title of this section, Fleeting Loyalty, I think the idea here is that Apple is still trying to produce new things, but people are trying to steal the loyalty of their customers by copying their ideas, right?
Yeah. And you constantly have to work at that. Companies have to always be – they have to be vigilant about that to maintain the loyalty of their customers, because the competitors are always going to be after them. Well, we see here that these followers of the idea of coming up with something delightful, they want to create something. What do they want to create?
Fanaticism.
Yeah?
They want, you know, you remember when the iPhone first came out, everybody wanted an iPhone, right?
Mm. Yeah.
People were lining up to get them. You had to wait a few weeks for them to come into the store. People were crazy about iPhones, and people want that same kind of fanaticism about their products.
Fanaticism being a noun, fanatical being the adjective, might describe people lining up for hours and hours to buy the new phone at midnight.
Right. When somebody's a fan, they go to extraordinary lengths to enjoy that thing and also follow that thing, like devotion. They have devotion towards it.
Well, it's hard work to win the loyalty of customers in this world today. You can do that with a flashy new gadget, something that's really cool and slick and does some great things. But that new gadget can quickly,
well, become tomorrow's 8-track tape player. An interesting cultural reference.
The 8-track player was introduced in cars back in the late 60s and early 70s. It was the only way people could actually have portable music in their vehicles. And it was just this big bulky thing that had this tape in there. And it was really inefficient. However, it was better than what they had before because there was no other method before. The 8-track tape player then quickly became extinct. It was replaced by the cassette player. Well, I'll tell you more about that tomorrow, listeners. Come on back. We'll see you then.